And we're back. Welcome to a new edition of Full Access Hoops and our first ever open floor debate series. This is a new basketball debate series. We're starting off Full Access Hoops. I'm not sure how often it'll be. The other day we had a pretty heated conversation in the OTG basketball group chat between some Knicks and Nets fans. And Mike actually came up with the idea that we should probably throw this onto a podcast possibly. And that's what we're doing. So with me, I have Mike, I have Will. Introduce yourself, fellas, and on what side you will be debating for.
What's up, everybody? This is Mike at Mikey_Ryan11 on Twitter. I'll be debating on the side of the Knicks today and discussing some of the team aspects for them going forward as we head into this NBA offseason.
Yeah, guys, my name is Will. You can follow me at WJackson99__. I will be debating for my hometown team, the Brooklyn Nets, and I will be pretty much doing the exact same thing that Mike is doing today.
And I'm going to be moderating. I'm not going to be doing a lot of talking. I'll be asking the question, and then we'll be letting them debate their points. I'll give my opinion on who the winner is at the end of the show. But what we're really hoping for after this podcast is we'll be running a poll on Twitter, and we'll give you, the listener, a chance to voice on who you think has the best upcoming future. That's pretty much what we're debating on this pod. Is who has the best upcoming future going forward? Is it the Knicks? Is it the Brooklyn Nets? So now it's time to get right into it.
Let's go. I'm ready.
Sure, let's do it.
I'm excited for this.
It's the
Battle of New York. So the first question we have is, who has the better team young core, or who has the best young core of these two teams?
Well, for me, the way I look at a young core are still guys on rookie level contracts. So the way for the Knicks, I'm looking at Kevin Knox, Mitchell Robinson, Dennis Smith Jr., Frank Ntilikina are pretty much the four main core pieces. You could throw Alonzo Trier in there, but he's a restricted free agent this offseason, so his contract situation is a little different for the Knicks, but I do believe he will be a part of the team going forward in the future. I do like the Knicks core. The Nets core, you're looking at like Caris LeVert, D'Angelo Russell. Obviously, he's about to get a nice little extension. I like the Nets core a lot. Jared Allen, very good. Joe Harris, I know he's on his second contract, but he's only making about $7 million per year. The Nets, obviously, playoff team this year. The Knicks, 17-65. The Knicks guys are all 19, 20 years old. Mitchell Robinson did finish second in the NBA in blocks per game, considering he took a year off of basketball. I think that was pretty impressive. I like the Knicks going forward with the money they have. The Knicks young core is something that they could definitely build around.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, Mike. So if we're looking at just rookie-level contract only, I don't think that'll include Dinwiddie. I don't think that'll include Joe Harris. I don't even think that'll include D'Angelo Russell. But, I mean, if you look at guys like Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, and Rodion Sturgeon, Zanon Musa, I think those guys are set up a lot better to be successful later on for the Nets than what the Knicks have right now. I mean, if you look at the season the Nets just had, all these guys except for Musa had – got playoff experience, and I think that's so much more valuable for young players than just being on the worst team in the NBA and kind of quote-unquote tanking for other players to join your team. You know, the Knicks, you know, the whole season they've been looking forward to having Zion Williamson, they've been looking forward to getting Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving or Jimmy Butler, whoever it is, and as a result of that, you know, the team wasn't really winning that much. And for the Nets, I think that winning provides so much more value than just looking forward to other teams. And I think that's what the Nets core got out of this season.
Agreed. And I do think with the Nets making the playoffs, their playoff experience does matter. But honestly, this could be a playoff team with the amount of money they have next year. It's easy to fill in the pieces. They could get to the same level experience for these guys moving forward if they really wanted to. I just think for the Knicks, it's much better off if they're gonna really develop these young guys, if they strike out on free agency. I would just develop these guys. It doesn't matter wins and losses that much. And playoff experience is theory, but how much does it really do for these guys moving forward?
Well, you saw how, you know, being a first-year player in the playoffs took a toll on the Nets. You know, they lost in five games to the Philadelphia 76ers, who, for the Sixers, their young core, that was their second year in the playoffs, and they were able to move past the Nets. So I think that I'm not calling the Nets core as good as the Sixers core. I mean, the Sixers core is amazing with Simmons and Embiid and agreed, whatever. But I'm saying that, you know, the Nets will have as close to the amount of money that the Knicks will have. And I think that even if the Knicks sign a player this offseason, that doesn't guarantee them to be in the playoffs, you know. I mean, Mitchell Robinson, I love Mitchell Robinson. I think that he's the second best center in New York right now behind Jared Allen. But if the Knicks sign a player right now, I don't know if that guarantees them to be in the playoffs because, I mean, Kevin Knox is as like, good as he was in college and as good as he was in the summer. Like, he didn't show tremendous development throughout the season this season. I mean, Frankin Ntilikina hasn't really shown up a lot in the NBA so far. I'm sure he still has a lot of time to develop, but I don't think that he's shown as much development as guys on the Nets, such as Caris LeVert, such as Jared Allen, which is why I think the Nets core is a lot stronger moving on.
Oh, go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say, this Knicks young core is still – they're still a year, two, maybe 3 years away from being where, like, the Nets are. Like, Caris LeVert's already turned 26 years old. Kevin Knox played this whole season at 19. So, I mean, it's hard to compare Kevin Knox to where Caris LeVert is at this stage of their career. Now, Kevin Knox, I do believe, like, his future could be something. And, like, and next year he'd be a player for a good team. And same thing is about Frank Ntilikina. His strengths are on defense and just playing off ball and just worrying about the defensive side of the ball. If he could do that in a role playing 15 to 20 minutes, the Knicks could use that $77 million. And say they did pull off a trade for Anthony Davis. They could fill out with quality role guys that split up the other 50 or so million dollars and have a playoff team easily in the Eastern Conference. Like, the 6 through 8 are still wide open.
Well, I'm just going to put it out there. That report came out today that the Pelicans are not intrigued by what the Knicks have to offer compared to other teams. So, I mean, I don't think that you guys necessarily have the ability to pull off a trade for Anthony Davis.
We'll hold on to the Anthony Davis stuff. Now, two more questions on the core part before we move on. And you can both argue on this, obviously, because both of you are going to have opposite opinions. Who has more upside, Jared Allen or Mitchell Robinson?
To me, it's Mitchell Robinson by far. Like, didn't play basketball at all last season, came out of high school, didn't play at all when he went to Western Kentucky, sat out the whole season. So everyone saw what he did in the summer league. He was averaging 4.5 blocks per game. It seemed like a fluke. It seemed like a mirage. What does the guy do when he comes out and plays in his first NBA minutes? He finishes in the league second in blocks per game, averaging about 2.4 a night. The only person who averaged more blocks was Anthony Davis. And Anthony Davis is playing 34, 33 minutes a night before he gets started sitting out in the second half of the year. So I do think Mitchell Robinson's offensive game did grow tremendously. I know Jared Allen's a very good center. He's really good in the pick and roll game. He's good at finishing at the rim. Mitchell Robinson, though, he shot over 60% from the field. I think he's a real player, and I think he's going to dominate in the future.
Look, I have respect for Mitchell Robinson. I think that he's a very good center. But, I mean, the one thing that you have to look at, first off, Jared Allen is younger than Mitchell Robinson. We have to put that out there. Not by much, but he is still younger than Mitchell Robinson. That's still a factor in development. I mean, Jared Allen came into the league in 19. He's 20 now. He just turned 20 a few months ago. He was just in the futures game. A lot of the offensive and defensive categories, Jared Allen showed so much improvement on from his rookie year to his second year in the NBA. I mean, he's up in points, up in blocks, up in rebounds. I mean, he's so much development, and he's still only 20 years old. I think that if he puts on a little more weight in the offseason, because that's also something that Mitchell Robinson has the advantage of right now. Mitchell Robinson's a little more heavy set. He's a little stronger when it comes to that aspect. But I think that Jared Allen, because he's younger, he has the ability to put on more weight, gain more muscle, and gain a bigger aspect to his game. And plus, Jared Allen says that he's going to start working on his three-point shot, which could add a huge, huge part to his game.
I love Jared Allen as a player, but I just really do believe that Mitchell Robinson is going to be way better than Jared Allen as his future.
I wouldn't say that he's going to be way better than Jared Allen.
But, I mean, come on. I mean, like, Jared Allen just had
I know he's a
little bit younger, and I mean, like,
you've seen Jared one season of Mitchell Robinson, and you already say that you've seen only one season of Mitchell Robinson. How can you say he's going to be way better than Jared Allen?
That's just ridiculous. 7 points per game, put up 6 rebounds a game, shot 69% from the field. He averages second most blocks in the NBA. He was such a raw and untapped potential. Nobody saw this coming as a second-round pick. He was a 36th overall pick. So many teams pass on him. He comes out. He has blow-up games. I mean, this is what Mitchell Robinson was. He didn't start starting until the end of the year, and he put up these monster numbers.
Will, final thoughts before we move on to the next topic?
Yeah, I mean, you also have to remember that Mitchell Robinson – and I hate to use this point, but I'm going to have to make it – Mitchell Robinson was the best player on the worst team in the NBA. I mean, I don't want to say a lot of his
stats means added, nothing, but no, it literally means nothing. That actually means nothing.
I mean, if you think so, but I mean, would you say that Kemba Walker, like, literally averaged 26 points per game, or was he the best player on a bad team? I mean, Mitchell Robinson.
Be the best player in a bad team, that doesn't affect if you're comparing individual talents.
I mean, that means that he's going to be able to put up more stats than other players. Like, if no, he had
– that means anything, he's worse players.
Mitchell Robinson, player. If Mitchell Robinson had D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, and Joe Harris on his team, if he didn't have – if Mitchell Robinson had those players on the team, he wouldn't have averaged many points. He wouldn't have gotten as many touches as Jared Allen did.
I'm just saying, as a defensive player, Mitchell Robinson is – better than Jared.
I think Mitchell Robinson is better defensively right now. I think Jared Allen
is better than Mitchell Robinson is right now. He's a little more developed in the mid-range game. He's more moves in the post. Mitchell Robinson is an untapped raw potential player. This is in his rookie season that nobody saw coming. He put up 7 and 6 points per game. 7 points, 6 rebounds per game, averaged 2.5 blocks per game. And he only played about 20 minutes a game. Like, that's all he was playing. Next year, he's going to play a lot more. He's got a whole offseason put in his offensive work. I really do think that this kid's going to be a rising star in the league. And I think he will be like a top five. I think he's got Rudy Gobert type potential on the defensive side of the basketball.
I mean, that's a very high comparison to put for someone
who's
only played one season in the NBA.
And that's it. We're moving on to the next topic. I thought that was fantastic for the first ever topic on this debate pod. That was extremely entertaining. So moving on now to the next aspect of these teams. We talked about the cores. Now it's the coaching / culture. Will, how about you lead us off with this one?
Oh, my God. Where do I begin? James Dolan. No, I'm kidding. The Nets have set a precedent where they feel that their culture is their strength. You know, that's the thing that they believe that they're going to sell the free agents on. They're going to sell their young core on, that they have built such a strong culture. And it's not like this is just coming out of nowhere. This is, you know, something that the players talk about. This is something that Ed Davis said, you know, at this point in my career, you know, Brooklyn is the type of place that I want to finish out my career. Jared Dudley says that, has praised the Nets for their training center. They've praised the Nets for just the culture overall. You know, even the young players, D'Angelo Russell's bought in, Caris LeVert has bought in, Jared Allen, Spencer Dinwiddie, all these guys have bought into this culture that doesn't believe in tanking, that doesn't believe in, you know, just we'll wait for players to come to us. We believe in developing our players, and then players will come to us. And when it comes to coaching, I mean, I personally believe that Kenny Atkinson is a better coach than Dave Fizdale. I mean, we haven't really seen Dave Fizdale with the Knicks having a good team necessarily, but from what we've seen so far, I do believe that Kenny Atkinson is a better coach than Dave Fizdale.
I would agree with that. I'm not going to argue that Kenny Atkinson is not a better coach than David Fizdale. I think that's pretty set in stone. There's not many debate points there. I do think team culture and the culture that the Nets are building is a tad bit overrated, and it's become –
why is that?
I think they're the most over-celebrated 42-40 basketball team we've seen in quite a while.
Well, you have to remember –
the Orlando Magic just –
One minute, Will. Let Mike finish his point.
I will.
I'm just saying the Orlando Magic finished 42-40 as well. We're not boosting up their team culture and what Steve Clifford did. They're not getting the same national attention that the Brooklyn Nets have gotten. And look at the players you're talking about. They're – praising the Nets and their team culture. Like Jared Dudley, he's holding on for dear life. He's a role player. He's a vet. How many
he's
NBA contracts?
A 12-year really veteran. Right? So,
yeah, but I mean, like he's a ninth, 10th, 11th man. He's not playing real minutes. If he's playing real minutes on a real team, that's what you're going to be, a 6-8 seed for the rest of your career.
Oh, he played like 25 minutes on a playoff team. So,
yeah, but I mean, it's Jared Dudley. He's not making an impact. Your team got blown out in the playoffs. I mean, you're a 6 seed. You went 42-40. That's like NBA purgatory. That's the worst spot I think to be, is being anywhere.
Well, not when you're – I would agree with you if this were like the Utah Jazz, but no. The Brooklyn Nets have a young core and cap space moving forward. If we were 42-40 and our player 35 years old, yeah, I would be terrified right now.
But what is your culture if you're thinking about bringing in all these reports about bringing in Kyrie Irving? So now you're just frustrating D'Angelo Russell, who is just an all-star for you, leading an all-dominant point guard, and now you want to almost replace him with Kyrie Irving. Yeah, I get they could play together. I don't know how it's going to work on the defensive side of the ball. It'd be great offensively, but that's also a question. I mean, you're basically banking on that Kyrie Irving and D'Angelo Russell could almost do what Chris Paul and James Harden do out in Houston as a best-case scenario.
Let's get back to the front office, though, and the culture of the Knicks with Scott Perry and everything else, Mike.
Hold on, Corey. I just wanted to go back to his point where he compared the Magic to the Nets for a second. The thing about the Nets and why people are celebrating the fact that they're 42-40, the Nets haven't had their first-round pick in over 5 years, okay? The Nets went from being – the worst of the worst, like the lowest point that you can be in the NBA. They had no talent on their roster. They had no picks. And somehow, miraculously, Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson came in and made this team a playoff team. That's why the Nets are so celebrated, right? The Magic, they've had their picks. They've had Obamas. They've had their Jonathan Isaacs. You know, the Nets have never had the opportunity to take those players. That's why the Nets are more celebrated right now than the Magic for making the playoffs, because they had one of the largest turnarounds very quickly in NBA history.
I mean, I think fair, I guess, but I do believe that's a little bit overblown, a little bit overrated. A 42-40 basketball team, it's a 500 basketball team. I mean, it's a great season from what they've had the past 5 years. They came out of the gutter, and now they are in a decent position moving forward. They're actually in a really good position moving forward. But they keep talking about team culture and all this culture, and everyone loves the Brooklyn Nets and all this good stuff. But I mean, like, if you're really serious about team culture, why are you almost thinking about bringing an all-star level point guard like Kyrie Irving?
Because if you're a good team, you want an
D'Angelo Russell. Let me ask you. D'Angelo Russell is the face of the franchise. No, so
all right,
hold on.
Pause.
Wait,
we gotta get back.
One question.
Okay.
Mike. Fair. Mike, you're an NBA team, right? You have the opportunity to pair your 23-year-old all star with an all star and an NBA champion. Do you do it?
I would do it 100%.
Exactly. That's why the Nets are interested in Kyrie Irving, because he's an all star and an NBA champion.
Do you think
he's done it on the big stage?
Look, do you think it would work out? Seriously.
Look, I mean, I don't know the logistics of it. I think the Nets do need forward help. I think that the guard shouldn't be the number one option. But if you have the opportunity to bring in a player on the level of Kyrie Irving, you don't just pass that up because you have another guard. You make it work. You don't, you know, say, oh, we don't want an all-star player because we have a guard who's not quite at the level of Kyrie Irving yet, but we think he can get there. If you have the opportunity to bring a player like Kyrie Irving into your team, you bring him into your team.
I agree, but I mean, I just think that the team culture overall concept is a bit overrated if they bring in Kyrie Irving and then turn around and sign and trade D'Angelo Russell to another team. I think that's fair.
Wait, Will. Okay. Now, Mike, please talk more about the actual Knicks culture and Scott Perry moving in. I want to get that your thoughts on them first.
The Knicks are where pretty much the Nets were 5 years ago. They are in their gutter. They tied their
franchise. Yeah, but they have seven first-round picks.
Well, please wait.
I'm getting there. Okay. Right now, at this point, they finished 17-65. That's tied for the worst record in franchise history. So they've done something they almost never do. I mean, the Knicks have been awful the last 20 years. I'm not debating that. But Scott Perry and Mills, and what they're trying to do now is they're really just trying to blow up the team. They blew up the team. They traded Porzingis. They got the two first-round picks. They cleared all the salary from Tim Hardaway and Courtney Lee. That's what freed up all that cap money. They still have the Joakim Noah contract on the books. That's kind of unfortunate. But they do have the cap flexibility, the financial flexibility. Now they have six draft picks over the next 4 years after the season. They have the third overall pick. They have Kevin Knox. They have Mitchell Robinson. They have Alonzo Trier. They have Damian Dotson, who I think is a bit underrated, and I think he could be a pretty valuable player. They have Dennis Smith. They at least have young guys that they could turn around and flip for valuable veterans if they want to make a playoff push for next season. And if they don't want to do this whole rebuild, if they want to rebuild quickly, I think it would be a mistake. But they finally have the financial flexibility and the draft capital to start being players in the free agency and trade market. And I do think that Scott Perry has a vision for this team. I think he's got a plan. And this was year one. Like, I think it's unfair to compare these Knicks teams to the Phil Jackson teams. Scott Perry inherited a mess. And now he's doing his best to clean it up the same way as Sean Marks did it for the Nets. He's just doing it in a different way. He cleared out his cap money. He's got the draft capital, and I think he's put the Knicks in a pretty good position going forward. Anyone criticizing them for the 17-65 record, I always believe you have to bottom out in the NBA before you become good. So I'd much rather be now at 17-65 with where we are standing now going into this offseason than I would have said where the Knicks wanted to be 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Well, let me just start by saying, when a player on the level of Kristaps Porzingis asks for a trade and wants out, despite the promises of, you know, big players coming, that says something about your organization. When you have had seven executives since James Dolan has taken over the team, that says something about your culture, okay?
What does that say about Scott Perry and what he's doing?
It doesn't say anything about Scott Perry, but it says something about the Knicks culture. I mean, everything that the Knicks talk about
is now the general manager and team president. Scott Perry's running everything. I don't believe all that stuff.
But
James Dolan, he's been playing with his band. He's been out of town. He's been just pocketing checks, and he's just dishing out money. He doesn't care. He's not involved
with the – Didn't he just ban the fan from MSG for life because he said sell the team?
Who cares about a stupid fan that goes – would just started to run his mouth? Like, seriously, that means nothing.
Didn't he kick Charles Oakley out of the arena? Didn't he kick Charles Oakley out of the arena?
Yeah, Charles Oakley was making an ass of himself. You apologize? Yeah,
all right, man. Look, so I kind of forgot the point that I was going to make just because I was focused on just trashing James Dolan for a second.
That's fair.
But, I remember. Right? I mean, hold on. So I keep forgetting my point. Shoot. Right, so everything that Knicks fans talk about is how the Knicks have a certain lore behind them, right? They have MSG. They have a huge culture of, you know, a huge history of winning. And I'm saying, you know, that was big back in the 80s and 90s. But if you look in the last 20 years, the Knicks have not done anything. You know, the Nets have been more successful than the Knicks in the last 20 years. The Nets have made the finals twice in the last 20 years. The Knicks haven't. The Nets have played
the Nets finals in 2000 and 2001. The Knicks made the finals in 1999.
Yeah, I'm just saying. And then
we're talking 20 years ago. It literally means nothing in the year 2019.
Okay. Just saying.
Look,
man. So all the Knicks fans talk about is how – so now what your argument now is that the only thing that matters is Scott Perry. Is that right? The only thing that matters is Scott Perry is
wouldn't you make the case that nothing matters before Sean Marks?
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
Exactly. So the Brooklyn Nets were in turmoil when they had Billy King. And when Booker was getting involved with all of this stuff, the Nets haven't really been relevant. They had the Deron Williams. They're still paying Deron Williams money.
I thought we were talking about before Sean Marks and Scott Perry.
But you're saying Deron Williams. You're criticizing the Knicks for their past failures, but you don't want to criticize the Nets for their past failures.
I'm more than willing to criticize Billy King and the Nets' past failures, man. But I thought that the only thing that you wanted to talk about was Scott Perry because that's all that matters now for the Knicks.
That's all that does matter. He's the one running the operation right now.
Yeah, and I mean, look, has he done anything besides trade a player who wanted to be traded?
Trading Porzingis might have been the best move they ever made. Yeah, you trade a player that doesn't want to be there. He's got a torn ACL. He's 7'3". He's never played more than 66 games in a season. He's now going to be paid a max contract coming off a torn ACL. Do you want to pay that contract? I wouldn't. I would be that's a big risk for the Dallas Mavericks. They gave up two first-round picks. There's no guarantee the Mavericks are going to be playoff teams. Those could be lottery picks. Luka Doncic is great. The Mavs have salary cap for one spot. They haven't done well attracting a player there. Porzingis is never healthy. Is he going to be the same player post-injury? Maybe, maybe not.
Look, man. Anyway.
I think that's fair. Now, moving on, you guys have been killing these topics. This is going to be the last one. This is not really a debate article. If anything, you're trying to sell the Pelicans organization and me, the listeners. What is your best trade package for Anthony Davis?
Mike, you go first on this one.
If I'm the Knicks, I would – it really depends. I wouldn't do anything unless I could guarantee that they know that they could bring in another player, player of a max caliber star on July 1st. Otherwise, I would be hesitant. If you could guarantee you could get a player on July 1st, I would be willing to give up everything. I would give up Kevin Knox. I would give up Mitchell Robinson as much as it would kill me. I would give up Frank Ntilikina, and I would give up Dennis Smith. I mean, those guys would kind of just be salary fillers. Kevin Knox, the number three pick, Mitchell Robinson would be the headlines. I would give up both Maverick picks that they got in the Porzingis trade. I do believe that would be valuable assets for David Griffin going forward. He could have Kevin Knox, RJ Barrett, who played with Zion Williamson, Mitchell Robinson. He'll have two more future first-round picks going forward. He could do whatever he wants with Dennis Smith and Frank Ntilikina. He could probably trade them off. He could keep them around, try to develop them on his own team, but they would just have to be thrown in for salary cap fillers. I would give up everything for Anthony Davis if you could guarantee another player on July 1st. If not, I'd be very hesitant to give up Mitchell Robinson. Everyone else, I think, is a tradable asset on this roster, including the number three pick.
I think it's fair. Will?
All right. So let me first start by saying it came out that the Pelicans want an all-star level player, a player with all-star potential, multiple picks for Anthony Davis. It also came out that the Pelicans. Oh, hold on! It also came out that the Pelicans don't find the Knicks' young assets especially attractive in a potential trade package for Anthony Davis. I'm just going to put that out there. But for what the Nets can offer, right? The Nets can't offer D'Angelo Russell until July 1st, and it came out that the Pelicans want to do the deal before the draft, so I'm going to assume that D'Angelo Russell isn't necessarily on the table in this deal. But if you look at an All-Star level player, before he got hurt, Caris LeVert was going to make the All-Star team. And even in the playoffs, he looked... What?
That's a bit ridiculous. Caris LeVert was not going to be an All-Star this year. He was not going to be better than D'Angelo Russell this year at any point this season. And D'Angelo Russell is an injury replacement. Caris LeVert was not going to be an All-Star.
Caris LeVert, before he got hurt, was averaging what D'Angelo Russell averaged after Caris LeVert got hurt. I mean, but that's besides the point. I'm saying that Caris LeVert definitely was playing at an All-Star level this season. He did it. He showed it late in the playoffs. He showed it before he got hurt. He showed it towards the end of last season. He went on a little bit of a run when he first got back. It took him a while to get through, but that's besides the point, right? So I'm going to say that the Nets can offer Caris LeVert, who is pretty much, in my opinion, an All-Star level player, right? I'm going to say the Nets can offer Jared Allen, who I think has All-Star potential. I'm sure Mitchell Robinson has All-Star potential too. I think Jared Allen has more than All-Star potential. I think that he has the potential to be a top center in the league from what he's shown. You know, David Griffin has come out and said that he does like Rodion Skuruks. I'm sure the Nets can offer him. I'm sure the Nets can offer Musa, and the Nets have picks to offer. So my pitch to the Pelicans is that we have young players, and we have players who have shown that they've played at an All-Star level on good teams. We have players who have shown a lot. We have players who have played in the Futures game. The Knicks don't. We have players that you like. We have picks to offer you. That is my pitch to you.
Now, before we get on out of here, I think both of your pitches are great. Now, these are your closing arguments. I'm going to be starting a timer. You both have 2 minutes for your closing arguments, and then we're going to wrap this up. Mike, you will start first. Your time starts now.
I really think that the Knicks and Nets are both in a pretty good spot going forward. And I really don't think it really can be argued that much. Really debating which team is going to be better moving forward really depends how July 1st goes. I know the Nets are a playoff team right now, and the Knicks really have the worst record in the league. The Knicks do have financial flexibility going forward for 2 max stars. They do have now 7 first-round picks over the next 5 years, including the number 3 pick, R.J. Barrett, who everyone is once the number one high school player before this college year, and he averaged and scored the most points in the ACC as a freshman. He's legit. The Knicks and the Nets, they're both good moving forward. I really do think they put themselves in pretty good spots. The Knicks are where the Nets were 3 years ago, I would say. The Knicks are really just starting to take off. It's really going to be a 3-year plan, 4-year plan if they don't sign anybody this July 1st. But I do think the Knicks and Nets are pretty solid position moving forward. I do like that finally the Knicks are finally in a good spot with financial flexibility. They can make up for the sins of 2010 and try to finally recover, move the franchise in the right direction moving forward for the first time in a long time.
You finished your 2 minutes a little bit earlier, so I'm going to ask you one more question.
Sure.
What is your percentage that the Knicks do get a top 15 free agent this offseason?
I would mark it at 60%.
Fair.
I do think they have the sales pitch. I do think they have the money. I do think they have the right guys in the room, the coaching staff, and in the front office that they might be able to convince one of the players to finally sign up and play at MSG this upcoming season.
Fair. Now, Will, that was a minute 47, Mike, pretty much 2 minutes. So, sure. Will, you have between a minute 47 and 2 minutes. Your final point starts now.
So, like Mike said, a lot of this is going to be signed July 1st or June 30th, the 6th. Who signs where? Do the Nets get Kyrie Irving? Do the Knicks sign Kevin Durant? Obviously, KD with the ruptured Achilles probably isn't going to play next year. Anyway, so my case for the Nets, right, is that because of the Allen Crabbe deal, they have cap space. And that's got a great player back in the Allen Crabbe deal. You have to remember, this wasn't just a salary dump of Allen Crabbe's contract. Taurean Prince, in all likelihood, could start on the Nets next season. All right, the Nets have an all-star player already in D'Angelo Russell, and he's only 23 years old. In my opinion, Caris LeVert is all-star level player. I think Jared Allen also has the potential, just like Mitchell Robinson, to be an all-star level player. The other thing going for the Nets is that something that's pretty much never happened in their history is that players are interested in coming to Brooklyn, right? We've seen Woj tweeted out that Kyrie Irving and the Brooklyn Nets have mutual interest in each other. You know, Now, seen reports that Tobias Harris and the Nets have mutual interest in each other. You know, this isn't coming out of nowhere. This isn't Nets fans making stuff up. I mean, the Knicks have been connected to free agents forever, but they rarely seem to get anybody. For the first time, we're seeing the Nets actually be linked to players, and it seems very realistic that they can bring players in. You know, the Nets also, I think that they have the better culture around them. You know, I think that they have one of the best GMs in the NBA, Sean Marks. I think he's done an incredible job turning this organization around. I think their owner, Joe Tsai, really brings an underrated factor into this. I think that he can grow any player's brand that he can in China, because that's where his big influence is. Obviously, we've seen him bring the Liberty into Barclays Center. I think that he plays a huge underrated role in this. And the other thing, the Nets are already in the playoffs. You know, the Nets are young. It's not like we're a 30-year-old team in the playoffs. We are a very young team led by very young players already in the playoffs. And I think that'll continue for years, especially if we can bring in a player like Kyrie Irving or Jimmy Butler or Kevin Durant or Kawhi Leonard.
Perfect. You hit that in a minute 56. So that does it for this first ever Open for Debate podcast. Michael Ryan, Will Jackson, thank you again for hopping on this. To everyone, for everyone listening, be sure to comment on the pod. Be sure to vote on the poll on who you believe, who you side with. Do you side with Mike? Do you side with Will?
Side with me.
Pick your sides. Guys, once again, give your Twitters out so people can follow you. And check out the more great content you guys produce for otgbasketball.com.
Awesome.
Mike, what's your Twitter?
At Mikey _11. At Mikey _Ryan11.
And I'm at WJackson99_. I'm going to have an article dropping soon about Kyrie Irving and D'Angelo Russell. Make sure to go check that out.
Sweet. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at KWAL Hoops. That's KWAL Hoops. Be sure to follow Full Access Hoops on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, YouTube, and also check out the brand otgbasketball.com for all the latest and greatest up-and-coming basketball content. Until next time.
And merch.
And merch. Yeah, dsgntree.com. We got t-shirts. We got the NBA outlet. We got Kawhi shirts. We have Brooklyn Buzz shirts. Be sure to check out all that good stuff. Thank you, Will, for reminding me. Until next time, peace out, knuckleheads.